When Israel Wayne was 13 years old, he was home with his five younger sisters when his stepfather came to the door in a rage.
I was sitting in the living room with a loaded 12-gauge shotgun that happened to be his, and I remember thinking, if that door latch breaks, I'll shoot him, because I knew that it was going to be either him or us.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wagamu, author of A Place of Quiet Rest, for Tuesday, April 18th, 2017.
Well, we're continuing our conversation today with Brooke and Israel Wayne. This family have become sweet friends of mine over the last several years. They live not too far from our ministry headquarters. We attend the same church, and the Lord has been sweet to let us just enjoy some mutual encouragement. We're all involved in speaking and writing and have public lives in ministries, but it's a sweet thing to have friends behind the scenes who can iron sharpening iron, and I've watched you parenting, I've watched you in your processing of family challenges, and we've shared some of those together over the last several years, and just as we're learning and growing, it's a sweet thing to have this relationship with you behind the scenes. So thank you now for coming into the studio and sharing with our Revive Our Hearts audience on a subject that I know is of huge interest to a lot of our listeners. So welcome back to Revive Our Hearts.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're very grateful for you and your ministry and just your example of godliness that we enjoy watching.
And thank you for that. And thank you for writing this book, Pitching a Fit. When you hear that title, you might, and you relate it to parenting, you might think it's about children pitching a fit, which children can do.
They do, yeah.
But it's actually not about children pitching fits.
It's more about us, actually. Yeah.
As parents.
Yeah, and several people have asked me if this is my autobiography, and well, yeah, it kind of is, you know.
Because the subtitle is Overcoming Angry and Stressed Out Parenting. And there's probably a lot more of this that goes on behind the scenes of homes than what we'd ever know when we come to church on Sunday,
right,
and everybody's dressed up and on their best behavior. You think there's a lot of angry and stressed out parenting going on?
Well, there's a lot of it on the way to church on Sunday.
No kidding. And on the way home, probably, too.
Yeah, if there's ever a time when you don't feel saved, it's when you walk in the door on Sunday morning. You're just like, you know what? I have a whole bunch of stuff to repent of right now before I sing any of these songs.
But then magically, these little halos appear over
right.
all our heads. And how you doing? And we're all just fine. Well, 10 minutes ago, we weren't.
That's right.
So thank you for bringing to the surface and talking about in a really open way what all of us experience in different ways. I think people express anger and respond to stress in different ways. But Israel, I saw you posted on Facebook not too long ago about a call you picked up that somebody didn't intend for you to hear.
Yeah, somebody had pocket dialed me, and I didn't know, you know, what the call was about, but it sounded like a distressed situation. So I stayed on the phone, and it turns out that this couple, who's a married Christian couple that I know, was in the middle of a rip-roaring fight, and it was nasty, and it was profane, and it was angry. And there was just a side of this couple that's very respected in their church and in their community that I had never seen before, that I would have had no access to in any other way. And I don't know that they ever knew that the situation had happened, but it sort of brought to my mind, you know, wow, what would happen if we had microphones or video cameras in our home playing out to Facebook or, you know, live streaming on the internet what we're doing all day, every day. And of course, that then leads to the thought that, you know, number one, our children see what happens in our home every day, which is of vital importance, but also the Lord sees and He knows. And, you know, our goal is that, you know, not that none of us will ever have days where we act out in sinful ways, but what do we do in those moments? What do we do in those moments where we realized, you know what, I just crossed the line of acceptability here. I have acted in a way that is not Christ-like. How we respond to those moments really, I think, determines the outcome of our relationships to a great extent, the future of our marriage and our future relationships with our children.
And these things really do impact our children in significant ways. Brooke, you shared yesterday, and if you didn't catch the last program, I'd encourage you to go listen to that or read the transcript at reviveourhearts.com, because there was some really practical wisdom there. But you told about coming into marriage and not thinking of yourself as an angry person, and then children.
Then children came along. And I had those times when I was pushed. I was stressed. I felt cornered. I felt out of time. I felt out of sleep. I was hungry because I was taking care of other people first, you know. And those moments really made me examine myself and see the selfishness that I had bound up in my heart that I didn't even realize. Because, you know, when you're single or when you're not in a stressful situation, you're not having that weight of responsibility, you maybe don't realize how much you still have of yourself in there that you need to get rid of and let God take that place.
And then those circumstances become tests that show what really is inside, which is a horrible thing, but it's a good thing.
It is. You know, that dying to self is a painful process, and sometimes it's slow, and sometimes, you know, we feel like, okay, we've conquered and we're putting a flag here, and yet we find out tomorrow we're met with more kinds of trials. And yet it's a good thing, because in ourselves, we don't have life. It's only in God that we have life and we have joy.
And I think a lot of parents enter into parenting thinking that the children will bring them joy.
Yes.
Which they do.
Yes.
But they also bring testing and challenge. And it looks like as soon as you get the first two figured out, then there's one child for whom no textbook was ever written, right?
We have that child, yeah.
In fact, you talked about your first child. You said, should be a lawyer.
Yes.
And you knew this from early on.
Age two, he was bringing out all of his court reasons why he should have his own way. And I was like, oh, boy. I was a bit of a pushover at that time. And so I had to kind of go, no, I'm the mom. You need to follow mama.
So each of these children really is a gift from the Lord to expose things, pride, anger, self in the heart that needs to go to the cross.
It is. It is. It's shown me in so many ways. And, you know, sometimes it's with particularly difficult children, it's easy to see how each day they make things difficult, how they don't respond well. And yet we have one of those, and that child has just made me realize all the more how much I needed him to help God do a work in me.
So, Lord, this was no accident.
No, it's not an accident. And, you know, I'm making it sound like a difficult thing, a painful thing. There are moments like that, for sure. But there's so much joy. And there's so much joy being able to be an agent of God's grace in our children's lives and being able to point them in those moments that they need corrected back to the cross, back to knowing Christ.
Now, you came out of a background where you had a lot of Christian nurture and knew a lot about the ways of the Lord. And I think that's true of a lot of our listeners. And God uses children to expose the Pharisee or the pride in the heart that they didn't know was there. On the other hand, I know we have a lot of listeners who have come out of really uber dysfunctional, angry backgrounds, and they almost feel like there's no way they can parent differently because that's all they've ever known. And I think they feel handicapped. And there's a lot of now multiple divorce and abuse. And Israel, when I first met you, I thought of you as just a pretty calm, kind of laid back guy who's got it together. But as I got to know more about your story, I realized that the Lord has done some major changing in you to redeem things in your past that could have been obstacles and barriers, but instead God is using today. So tell us a little bit about your background, because I think a lot of our listeners will relate to that as well.
When we sat down with our publisher to discuss with them the possibility of writing this book, one of the questions that they raised, because I've done several book projects with the same publisher and they know me fairly well, is they said, what could you possibly know on the topic of anger? You've never had an angry day in your life, have you?
So they thought.
And I thought, you know, what a blessing in a way that that would be how someone would think of me, that someone would identify me as someone who is not defined by anger, because my childhood was very difficult. My parents divorced when I was 6 years old, and my mother remarried a man who was very violently physically abusive and, of course, verbally and psychologically abusive as well. And we lived with him from the age of 6 to 15 in my life. And you think about how defining those years are in a young man's life from 6 to 15, it sets the tone for everything that you are, everything that you become, your view of your own identity, your view of manhood, your view of family, of parenting, of marriage. All of that gets shaped during that time. And I was living in a situation where literally my life was threatened on a regular basis. And, you know, my stepfather attempted to kill me on several occasions. And so I grew up not with a low-grade irritation or frustration, but with rage and explosive wrath and anger.
In your heart toward him?
Well, that was how I was treated. But there's a proverb that says to note an angry person and stay away from them, lest you learn their ways and become like them.
Did you see that process happening in your own heart?
And there's a couple of things about this. You have a wonderful book that you've written on forgiveness that I would encourage every listener to get if they're dealing with this. But one of the dynamics that I've learned is that if you cannot forgive someone who has hurt you, that it's very easy for you to become the person that you hate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we think that's counterintuitive. We think, well, I recognize the wrong that has been done to me, so I will never repeat that. I will never do that. But unfortunately, if you are consumed with hate yourself toward this person, you become that. It eats you up from the inside. And God thankfully let us out of that situation. He left when I was 15, and we were able to start rebuilding our life. But I found that I was that person. I was angry. I was full of explosive temper.
You actually had a moment when you expressed that toward him in a pretty significant way.
I did. I was 12 years old, and he was facing prison time for having tried to kill me. And I remember he said, he was looking at a 5-year sentence at that point, and I remember he said to me, if I go to prison, 5 years may seem like a long time to you, but it doesn't seem like long to me. And he said, when I get out, I will track you down, I will find you, and I will kill you. And then he looked in my eyes and he said, I hate you. And I remember I looked him right back in the eyes at the age of 12, and I said, I hate you too. And I literally meant it. I'd never hated anybody in my life, but I did. And my heart became so cold and so hard and so calloused as a self-protective measure.
Mm-hmm.
I never cried. I was a hand grenade about to go off.
And he actually did try and fulfill that promise when he got out of prison, what, a year later?
He actually ended up not serving time. They let him out on a year probation, so he didn't actually serve the time. And then the legal status was that if he didn't violate his probation, it would be struck from his record.
Wow.
So after a year, he actually came back, and it turned out that my mother was gone one day, and I was with my little sisters. I had 5 sisters, and we were at home. I was 13 years old, and he came to the house, and my mother had said, if he comes back, don't open the door because you know what'll happen, which I did. And I remember being in the living room of that house and him attempting to break down the front door. And I was sitting in the living room with a loaded 12-gauge shotgun that happened to be his, which he had threatened me with on multiple occasions. And I remember thinking, if that door latch breaks, I'll shoot him. And I would have, because I knew that it was going to be either him or us. And I think about how differently life could have been if that stupid little door latch hadn't held. You know, looking back on it now, I think there were angels on the other side of the door holding it closed because he was a big man. You know, I think about how God has enabled me now to have a ministry to families. The irony of that coming out of the kind of dysfunctional situation that I did is just a testimony to the grace of God.
And there was a point you skipped over pretty quickly to from there till now, but there was a point when you were in your mid-teens where the Lord met you in a transformational way.
Yes. I remember when I was 15 years old, I remember thinking to myself, I don't ever want to do to somebody else what has been done to me. When I was 15 years old, I remember sitting in a church service and I was wrestling with God and I was struggling with this issue of, does God really love me? I believed all the doctrines of the Christian faith. I believed that the Bible was true, that God created everything, that Jesus was who he said he was. I didn't doubt the omnipotence of God. I didn't doubt the omniscience of God. What I was struggling with was the love of God.
Because of what you'd experienced with his stepdad.
That if God knew about all of this, and if he had the ability to stop it, why didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled with that. And I was just having this conversation alone with God in the middle of a church service and just saying, why do you not care about me? Why do you not care about what's happened? And I remember God speaking to my heart, not audibly, but just speaking to my heart and just feeling this overcome with the love of God, that God spoke to me in my heart and said, I do love you.
Mm.
I care about you. Mm. And this is not for nothing.
Mm.
I care deeply about this, and it means everything to me. And knowing that God loved me changed me.
Mm. Knowing and
feeling it.
And believing it.
Feeling
yeah,
it. You
right.
know, I knew it intellectually, mm-hmm. but I didn't feel it. And, you know, our faith is not an experiential faith. We believe in an objective truth. But there are moments
yeah.
where God chooses to touch us in some subjective, personal way
mm-hmm.
that just lets us know he's there
mm-hmm.
and he loves us and he cares about us. And that happened to me. And I remember crying out to God and saying, God, I am incapable of changing myself.
Mm.
I don't like who I've become. I don't think I have the capacity to change myself. And if at some point in the future I would ever get married and have a family, I don't want to ever do to somebody else what's been done to me, but I'm afraid that I will. And I knew all the statistics that said that I would just repeat the process. I said, you've got to change me. And I just felt so washed, so bathed in the love of God and healed in a way that I was able to release that hurt, release that bitterness. I was able to allow God to be the judge. He was the one who was able to bring sentence. And God says that, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. That it wasn't my place to make sure that all the wrongs were made right. It was my place to trust that there is a God and I'm not him. And he loves me. And I need to walk in that. I need to live in that. And I need to live. I need to get beyond this and be able to have life and have a future and a hope. And God gave that to me and taught me then the principles from Scripture about how to walk out a new life and how to overcome that anger addiction.
And I remember as we sat in your living room and a number of years ago and you first shared this story with me, thinking that, you know, this guy could be a statistic and your children could be statistics of hatred and anger just being perpetuated, a cycle of violence and anger. But I look at you now, loving your children, not perfectly, but beautifully. And it was amazing to me to hear you tell about how at that age of 15, as you cried out to the Lord, how God supernaturally took away the anger out
yeah.
of your heart.
He just met
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. And I love your workbook that you've done, Seeking Him. Again, you know, that process of crying out to God and seeking him is so powerful. And in Jeremiah 29, that passage where God says, you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. And he will be found. He's not hiding. He's not trying to be elusive. He's there. He's near. And
he does love. And he
does
care.
Love. Yes.
And there's a sentence here I'm looking at in this book on angry parenting that I think is a powerful principle here for maybe a lot of listeners who are relating to the background that you just talked about and still feel this welling up, powerful addiction to anger. And you say, I had to be willing to exchange my right to be bitter and angry in exchange for God's love and mercy.
Mm.
So God reached out to you and expressed his love to you, but you had to be willing to hand over
yes.
the bitterness, the anger.
And what a glorious exchange. You know, if you're holding in your hand bitterness and anger and resentment and unforgiveness, and that's you're clutching it with all your might because it's yours and it belongs to you and you feel you have a right to keep it. And God is saying, open your hand, let me take that. It's not good for you. It's toxic.
Hmm.
It's going to kill you.
Hmm.
Let me take that and let me replace it with life. Why wouldn't we make that exchange? It's just that those things are familiar to us. It's what we've known. It's our default. And we're scared of what's on the other side. We don't know what it's like to be other than we are.
Mm.
And we've been taught in some cases by our culture and by humanism and all that, that we're stuck, that we have to be the way we are. We just don't believe that God is capable of doing anything greater or beyond what we ourselves are capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and fix this, it can't be fixed. It's not true. That's not the gospel. And that's why the message of the cross is so liberating. It's so powerful because there is no sin, there's no addiction, there's no habit, there is no past that is too great that God cannot redeem that for His glory, for our ultimate good and the good of others.
Wow. And I'm just thinking how many life stories and situations this applies to. This is the gospel.
Amen.
This is the gospel of debt. And both of you and myself as well. And we've, again, sat and shared with each other some of these stories from our own past. And some of this, you think, who could have scripted this background that all of us have experienced in different ways from past generations and things that we don't want to pass on to the next generation. But the power and the gift of forgiveness. Brooke, you've experienced some of that power in your own journey. The gift of saying, I release my past people who've influenced my life, family members, not to hang on to those things, but to release them. And I know you found a lot of freedom through doing that.
I have. And it's been a journey of everybody has people that rub them the wrong way and have done wrong to them. It's just part of being on this earth with a human fallen nature that each one has. And I have, I've had times in my life where I've had to just let go of those issues and forgive people that have hurt me and move on. And when I do, I find I have more energy. I have more joy to give to other people. It's almost like God's refreshed me and now I can have something to refresh other people with.
And when we don't, what does that look like?
Oh, the bitterness and the hatefulness. You know, one of my favorite stories is the story of Treasures in the Snow, written by Patricia St. John. And I read that to my children every year. And one of the things that she talks about, or the grandmother in the story actually talks about towards the little girl named Annette, who's dealing with this hatefulness and this bitterness towards a little boy in the same village who hurt her brother. And the grandmother wisely says, you're not going to be able to get rid of this hate on your own.
Mm.
This is like darkness. And if you want to get rid of the darkness, you can't just try to work and work and work to try to get rid of that darkness. You have to just let the light in. And she says to Annette, what happens when you open the shutters in the morning? Does the room stay dark? And of course, the little girl says, no, it just, the darkness disappears. It's light all of a sudden. I think that's true with us in relationship to God, that we can work hard to overcome our anger or bitterness or the things that we harbor in our hearts against others. But it's really when we allow the light of Jesus to come into us that that darkness is dispelled.
And as I'm listening to you share that, Brooke, and Israel listening to your story, I'm thinking about my own journey. I know we have listeners right now who are living in a very dark room, and there's a heart filled with anger, resentment, hatred, things that have been done to you over which you had no control. Maybe you were that stepchild who was being just totally mistreated, and now you find yourself continuing that cycle with your own children, provoking them to anger as you yourself were provoked to anger. And I just want to say, we want to say to you, open up the shutters and let the light of the gospel, let the light of Christ, let the love of God, let His power, His spirit, His life flood into your life and replace the darkness with light. And it may be that you need right now to just say, Lord, I'm going to do what Israel did. I'm going to yield up my right to be bitter and angry. I'm going to give it up to you. I'm going to let it go. And in exchange, right now, I want to receive your love and your mercy, the light for the darkness, the grace for the law. And that may in your life be something that happens quickly, as it did pretty much for you, Israel, sitting in that church service. It was a pretty dramatic transformation, and you continue to grow from that. And for others, it may be a slower process, a slower healing. Both are miraculous, and both are possible. And I want to thank you both for writing this book on overcoming angry and stressed out parenting, for sharing out of your own journey, because all of us, whether parents or not, deal with
how our past, our present, our circumstances create stress and then sometimes come out in anger, and how God really can set us free from that. We're going to continue this conversation on Revive Our Hearts the next time about how to replace the anger with the fruit of the Spirit and how to live not as angry parents, but as joyful, Spirit-controlled parents. But I want to let you know that this book is available through Revive Our Hearts, and we'll be glad to send it to you when you make a donation of any amount to help support the ministry of Revive Our Hearts. We'll be glad to send that to you. Just give us a call at 1-800-569-5959. 1-800-569-5959. Let us know that you'd like to have a copy of Brooke and Israel Wayne's book on anger, angry parenting, pitch in a fit, and we'll send that to you. And it's our way of saying thank you for helping us get this message into the hearts of women throughout this country and around the world. Be sure and join us the next time with Brooke and Israel Wayne on Revive Our Hearts.
Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss-Wagelmuth is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.